The General Speaks. Welcome. I am Valerie Thompson. The General Speaks is the latest interview with General Hudson Austin, the ex-commander of the now disbanded People's Revolutionary Army, PRA, as he looks back at the bloody events that took place 38 years ago on Fort Rupert, which is now back to its original name, Fort George. For Grenadians all over the globe, October is the month on the calendar which is best remembered for the collapse of the 1979-83 Grenada Revolution and the execution of the man who led the process for 4.5 years, Maurice Bishop, by his comrades in the ruling party, the New Jewel Movement. General Austin, who is popularly known as H.A., has consented to do a second interview to coincide with the bloodbath that took place on October the 19th, 1983, which brought an end to the first attempt by a government in the English-speaking Caribbean to chart a course of development that met with hostility from the major power in the Western Hemisphere, the United States of America. H.A. was visibly shaken as he spoke of the army massacre in which the leader, Maurice Bishop, and his close colleagues like Unison Whiteman, Jacqueline Creff, Norris Bain, Fitzroy Bain, Evelyn Brad Bullen, Keith Pumphead Hillin, and several others were lined up against a wall and executed by a firing squad led by Lieutenant Carlistus Bernard, who is known as Ayman Abdullah. The former army boss is the only high-ranking member of the imprisoned revolutionaries to come forward and speak openly about the split in the NJM leadership between Bishop and his deputy Bernard Code that opened the door for U.S. and Caribbean troops to storm the island on October the 25th, 1983, and bring an end to the Marxist experiment in the Spice Isle. In a very open and bold way, General Austin looked back at many things that happened in the process, including the darker side of the revolution, in which persons like Strawn Phillip were killed, and the manner in which members of the Stanislaus family who were visiting from England were gunned down in a hail of bullets in controversial circumstances in Plains in St. Patrick. We begin the interview with George Wurm asking H.A. the very first question.
You have spent over 25 years in prison among the 17 who were convicted for the gruesome acts of murder on the fort. In the first interview, you did explain your role in the process. However, the first question I will throw at you today in this our second engagement is this. Tell us the kind of feeling which runs through your mind every October as you are forced to look back at this event which many regard as the blackest period in our modern history.
George, the truth. I tell you the real truth. Because that man, I like to deal with the truth. There is nothing, not even my mother or father's death or brother's death that have affected me like what went on on the fort in my lifetime. It is the worst that I experienced in my lifetime, especially when I get to know the truth of what happened, because I was kept in the dark. Nobody at all told me the truth of what went on. Not an officer, not a soldier, none of the guys who was in prison with me told me the truth. As I told you before, I learned the truth after I came from prison. And when I came home that day, George, after I learned what really happened, I was not myself anymore until today. Because I cannot understand. I cannot understand how men who said they was comrades with one another could have lined up men, the two leaders and founders of the revolution, and give men from the same army guns to Shoot Dog, the leader, the two founders, Eunice Whiteman and Maurice Bishop, and many others who took part in the insurrection with me on the morning of March 13th. And when I say many others who took part, I mean people like Bob Haley. He went into blue with us. George, sometimes I don't even like to talk about it. I don't like to talk about it. It's so gruesome to think about. It's so ugly. It's so nasty that I don't even want to. Sometimes people ask me questions about it and I just tell them, well, look, we'll talk about that another time. You know my feeling. Then boys grew up as boys together, older than him, but we grew up as boys together. The family was so close. So close. His uncle is my grandfather. Was so close. But bullying is a relation to me. I related to all the bullies. Keith Pump and Helen used to come in this house as a son to me. I sure used to see him driving my car. Yeah. And without authority, people who had no authority at all to execute people, line them up and execute them.
But people are saying that if HA had taken a different stand during the crisis, the results might have been different.
A different stand during the?
That if you had come out clearly in support of Morris.
Oh, well, I did that.
People are saying you didn't support Morris.
Well, the point is, why they say that? I told you the situation with a letter from the Central Committee. And a letter from the Central Committee is always supposed to be unanimous. I didn't know it was a letter if my brother had gone. I thought it was truly a Central Committee letter. Because I respect that kind of thing, George. Remember, I was just back in the country, you know. I was just back. He was the Deputy Prime Minister. I was 6 weeks out of the country. And I was just back.
So in other words, you were not privy to the discussions?
No, I was not privy. Why do you think I abstained in the vote? I didn't know what was going on. When I left Grenada, George, there was no such thing as a talk about joint leadership in Grenada. Normally, if you have these kind of things, something is circulated. What discussion on it?
Okay, General, let me ask you this. What was the reaction of the other men of the 17th to some of the revelations you made in the first interview, in which you told the Grenadian people quite clearly for the very first time about the role of Bernard Code, whom you described as drunk and intoxicated with power?
Well, that is what he always talk about, you know, state power. The men of paranoid about state power and leadership. Paranoid about that. Everything is state power and leadership. That's all he wanted.
But what I was asking you, what kind of reaction you get, what kind of reaction you got from the other 17 now that you have exposed certain things about the revolution?
Some of them I have not seen. Some of them I have not talked to. But there's others who say, well, boy, you said the truth as you know it. And nobody can fight you for that. Quite a few of them call me. And I say, well, H.A. boy, as you say it as you know it. As you get it. Because what I'm saying was given to me by an eyewitness who was there.
On the foot.
On the foot. She was there. She saw everything. She was a soldier.
Okay, General, I have read an article in the recent days from Terry Marichaux, in which he made the statement that finally Hudson Austin and also Ian St. Bernard have now come out publicly and told the nation that the collapse of the Grenada Revolution and execution of Bishop and the others were done as part of this naked and vulgar grab for power by Code and his ultra-leftist clique within the party.
That is true.
Okay, did it shock you that Code would have used that period as the PRG was starting to put plans in place to mark the 5th anniversary of the revolution so he could have executed his plan to become Prime Minister of the country?
Whether Code is the man who planned everything together with his top boys. Because this whole joint leadership thing, he set it up to get some of his men to call for it. I didn't even know that. To call for it. And using the thing that they joined Maurice's strength and Bonnard's strength to set the revolution. This is what they're saying. This is the way I discuss it with other members of the party. They say this is, for instance, I've never seen that document. This document that they put out for this joint leadership thing, I've never seen it. When I am getting it, I had no such thing. What chart? That was done behind my back. And a lot of things were done behind my back. Okay? Even the morning of March 13th. Even the morning of March 13th. We were supposed to meet with Boris. I know who squashed it. I know what happened. I know the demonstration went up there.
October 19th.
You correct me. Even that morning, we were supposed to meet in Marshall. And Bernard and so. But the talk went out that, I understand so, that Bernard had a meeting by his house with he and his clique. And they were shouting out, long live the revolution in Marshall, head over there all night. Because you know he never had next to Morris. And then, next morning, this rumor went out. They said, oh, Morris say that Bernard and Phyllis Code want to kill him. That's the rumor. Right. What happened then is, the demonstration came up there, and the people take Morris and go with him. Because I understand that the men in the gate had orders not to open the gate for Morris, for people going inside him when people bring down the gate and go in. But the soldiers did not shoot at the people, which is a very good thing, because there was always too loud to fire on ground. That was part of their training.
Not to fire on the people.
Not to fire on the people. Okay? So what happened is, this rumor, up to today, we don't know if themselves spread the rumor or what.
Because I want to ask you the question. Did you believe Maurice Bishop was the one behind the rumor that Code and his wife were planning to kill him?
I cannot say directly, George, what is what. But I went to see Maurice's mother, the very mother, and she was heartbroken. Because a woman by the name of which she called Massimian was there. And she told me what Morris said is true. Bernard and Phyllis is planning to kill Morris. Massimian tell me that. She said, I know what will make Morris believe it more is what they did the night before.
Which was?
What they did the night before the meeting, they had my Bernard shouting out and going on. But a lot of people were invited to that. Only Bernard and his boys were there. I didn't know nothing about it. The next morning when I went to see Morris, he told me what went on. So he said, oh, they didn't invite you. He said he was at a big security meeting. They said, well, he wasn't there. He's supposed to be the head of the army, and there was a big security meeting, but he wasn't there.
They deliberately left you out.
That's right. But immediately, he got what I didn't want to tear up.
Now, at the height of the crisis in 1983, you alluded to it that delegations from the NGM Central Committee were sent to meet with Bishop,
yeah,
who was under house arrest at Mount,
yeah,
Weldale, to try and resolve the crisis.
Yeah.
But it was noted that Eche, who had a very close relationship with the Prime Minister, was never among those who were on the delegation to meet with him. Why were you not part of the delegation, since you were known to be close to the Prime Minister and could have played a key and pivotal role in helping to ease the tension and possibly save the revolution?
I didn't know what use the delegation to go and meet to them. But I was not invited to any meeting at all.
I believe St. Bernard and Lane were among part of the delegation who went to meet with Morris?
Well, like well boys. One of them. Well.
Now, when Bonacco resigned from the Central Committee and the political bureau of the party, I think it was in 1982 or thereabout, it was my understanding that the late George Louison then became the chief ideologue in the NGM and was doing a relatively good job. There is a feeling that if Louison had remained in the job, that Code's usefulness would have evaporated to naught, and so he had to stage manage a comeback with his disciples to fulfill his long time ambition to be the Prime Minister and take charge of the Grenada Revolution. What say you, Eche, to that?
Well, Code is a manipulator. And he do anything, I suppose, I would not do he do or would have done in order to be the Prime Minister. That man, the least chance he get, he would denounce Morris. Oh, Morris can't guide the process and this and that. So, nothing that he do, or had done, or would do, would surprise me. Nothing to get power. Nothing he did would surprise me.
So he would make these kind of statements about Morris to other comrades?
Yeah, I heard him making one. I heard him making a statement to Lyndon and Danny one day, saying that if imperialism have to come, they ain't coming for Morris, they're coming for him.
Okay. H.A., General, one other school of thought that I have heard is that Bernard Code had to make a bid to seize power as soon as possible, as Maurice Bishop was consolidating his power and prestige as leader of the process,
yeah,
and that Fidel Castro was scheduled to visit Grenada on the occasion of the 5th anniversary of the Grenada Revolution, which would have coincided with the official opening of the International Airport. And we all know that Maurice was referred to as Fidel's political son. Not Code. What say you on this theory?
That is correct. You couldn't put it more correct than that. That is why they tried to jump for the joint leadership thing before the opening of the airport. The opening of the airport would have coincided with March 13th,
1984. 84. Would have been the 5th anniversary.
The opening of the airport, so that would have been in March 1984. So they wanted to be in place before Fidel come. Yeah, they wanted the joint leadership before Fidel come and all of that kind of thing. And before the opening, because you know, the kind of popularity that Morris would have developed after the opening of the airport. You could understand.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of people that would have been down there.
From all over the world too.
From all over the world.
A lot of revolutionaries from
Africa. A lot of revolutionaries from all over the place.
The Caribbean.
And not only revolutionaries, but people in the diaspora would be so glad that Grenada getting an international airport when they want to come home. Look at me. I got in Barbados. 5 o'clock one evening, I could come home. They put in a light in. 5 o'clock, you know, the same. I'd overstay a night and a day in Barbados before I could come home. Because Boris called me while I was in Czechoslovakia and tell me I'm needing home. So I got home a day late.
Eche, as you reflect on the bloody October events, what you think could have been done by the leaders that was not done in order to save the Grenada Revolution?
The only thing that could have been done to save the Grenada Revolution, you had to get some magnet to put in Bernard Brains to get leadership out of his head.
So what you said?
He had to put a magnet in his head, telling him he's wrong, because he couldn't see wrong no way. He like a cow that bolted when he see ready. Because I proved that with him in a lot of ways. He would just want to go in people's ministry and do things without consulting the minister concerned. He is not the type of consultant leader. He's the kind of bulldozing leader. Right? He is a Stalin. He's a Hitler, that kind of people. That kind of person he is. And nobody telling me no.
You experience him?
I experience it. Because we are gonna bring it away. Move on that. Meditate twice. He just fired one of my engineer, a fella called something Noel from, you know Noel?
St. David's, you said.
From St. David's, working on the Eastern Main Road. And listen, I experienced Bernard Code greed for power early in the game. I experienced that. I don't know if other comrades experienced it, but I experienced it. Starting evil. Before we made the revolution. How we want to try to control everything. Even before we made the revolution. And when he do certain things, he says certain things has to be done that they need to know. If a person don't need to know, you don't tell them. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
They need to know. That was one of the main strategy and tactics. We're not telling certain people certain things because they don't need to know.
Okay, Eche, you know all the players who were involved in the NGM leadership. Many people were surprised that someone like yourself and Selwyn Strawn, who were very close to Maurice Bishop, deserted him in the end and supported the court side in the battle for control of the party. What do you think caused Selo, as he was called by many, to move away from the Prime Minister and into the court camp?
Well, I really can't say. Because Selo is not a power-hungry fella. Selo is not a power-hungry fella. I don't know if, because Selo always talking about, okay. I don't know, because Selo is a man who always talking with Boris, and I don't know if Selo is certain thing with Boris, that Boris will be slapping dog or water. I don't know. I can't see. If I try to say, because Selo is a fella I like, and he was always a man for doing things properly. And I'm going to tell you, Selo himself did not know the man was executing on the phone. He did not know until after. The need to know was kept away from him. He didn't know.
But Selo was making statements 24 hours after on the radio,
uh-huh,
in which he was saying that Bishop Morris had teamed up with bourgeois elements to overthrow the revolution and he had to be dealt with. Selo was saying that.
I didn't know the answer, so. I don't know about that.
I got a tape in which Selo was saying that. And as a
matter
of
bourgeois elements.
I don't know if he was referring to Brad Bullen and them, but he didn't call name, but he said bourgeois elements. As a matter of fact, after the event on the 4th, there was an emulation ceremony which Selwyn addressed the soldiers and he was praising people as inculcate.
Selwyn was down there?
Selwyn Strong.
He addressed them down there in the 4th?
He addressed them, I'm not too sure which 4th.
Oh, the 4th. It is Richmond Hill.
It could have been Richmond Hill. I'm not too sure which fort. But there was an emulation ceremony after the killing of Morris. And Selwyn addressed it. And he said he was praising Inculcate. And he said Inculcate the machine gunner as being part of the firing squad to liquidate Morris. Selwyn was saying so.
I did not even know. Well, George Forsyth heard that.
I have a copy of that tape. I know Peggy Nesfield also have a copy of that tape with Selwyn's own voice saying those things.
I'd like to get that. I'd like to get that copy of that. Because
I did a story on that tape already some years ago.
How come Stella was in jail with me and he never, did I receive what I told you? He never told me a thing about that. I did, first time I know George about that too, about they had a
emulation ceremony.
An emulation ceremony for the execution squad?
Well, not, I wouldn't say for the execution squad, but emulating some soldiers. And he said when addressed the emulation ceremony, and he made those remarks.
You see, I wasn't there. I didn't invite you to Austin. They weren't in Austin, they too close to Paris.
I want to switch focus here and look at some of the dark side of the revolution.
This is the end of part one of The General Speaks. We will be back with part two of the interview in the next hour. And believe me, you will be left in awe as H.A. continues to look at some of the dark sides of the revolution. He will talk about a former comrade who helped to make the revolution, being killed in an army operation when soldiers stormed his home in a village in the St. George Southeast area.